We are pushing the limits to do everything we can to get every single evacuee out of Kabul.
Evacuations increase as August 31st deadline draws near. It's Wednesday, August 25th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, rights advocates urge UN to hold Taliban accountable. Afghan Americans worry about family under Taliban regime. Border controls and attitudes towards refugees have hardened. Disability rights take center stage at Tokyo Paralympics. Digital art unlike any other. It's all in today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden plans to stick to his August 31st deadline for U.S. troops to leave Afghanistan, an administration official said on Tuesday. Earlier, President Biden and other G7 leaders met virtually to discuss the situation in Afghanistan, with several pushing for Mr. Biden to keep U.S. troops in the country beyond next week's deadline to facilitate the ongoing evacuation effort. The Taliban have rejected any extension of the deadline. More than 21,000 people were evacuated from Kabul in the past 24 hours, according to the White House, the result of more than 90 U.S. military and coalition flights. Since August 14th, the U.S. has evacuated and facilitated the evacuation of more than 58,000 people. Several thousand Americans have been among those evacuated, according to Pentagon officials. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
Evacuations from Kabul airport have ramped up, but tens of thousands of people still need to get out. General Steve Lyons is the commander of U.S. Transportation Command.
We are pushing the limits to do everything we can to get every single evacuee out of Kabul.
Reports were confirmed by the Transportation Command Chief Monday that three babies have been born amid the evacuation chaos, a testament to the humanity and the desperation of the evacuation. Inside Kabul, a precarious security situation, a firefight and a stampede outside the airport, both deadly. Taliban checkpoints still daunting and potential attacks from Islamic State looming. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
Our commanders on the ground have taken every step they can to prepare for such an attack.
Some of the 5,800 U.S. forces are now conducting sporadic rescue operations to help Americans get to the airport, with the August 31st deadline just days away, a date the Taliban have called a red line. Major General Hank Taylor and Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby told reporters that some of the 5,800 U.S. forces are now conducting sporadic rescue operations to help Americans get to the airport.
Are you going to ask for authorization of more troops?
And what I said is that 5,800 were able to continue to secure the airfield, continue to increase safety there, and continue to do the operations that we already have.
There are no plans at this time to request or to authorize additional U.S. forces to this mission.
Veterans groups and non-governmental organizations are urging the president to get every American and at-risk Afghan out. Matt Zeller is the founder of the veterans group No One Left Behind.
Despite the fact that what the president is going out and saying to the global, you know, community that what he's reporting simply isn't true, that the vast majority of the people who want to get to the airport can't.
The White House vowed Monday to continue evacuations for as long as it takes. Again, Jake Sullivan.
We will continue to get Afghans at risk out of the country even after U.S. military forces have left.
But just how those Afghans will be rescued beyond an American troop pullout remains to be seen. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Be sure to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Airbnb to offer free lodging for 20,000 Afghan refugees. Turkey rebuffs Europe's call to host Afghan refugees. Amid fear, criticism, Taliban want international recognition of representative rule. Women soccer players leave Afghanistan on evacuation flight. U.S. is open to North Korea aid regardless of denuclearization progress. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Participants at a special session on the human rights situation in Afghanistan have urged the UN Human Rights Council to investigate abuses committed by the Taliban and to hold them accountable for their crimes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet kicked off the proceedings. She gave a harrowing account of the many credible reports her office has received of violations committed by the Taliban against the Afghan civilian population, including summary executions and restrictions on the rights of women. She noted commitments made by the Taliban to respect the rights of women and of ethnic and religious minorities. She said they also have pledged to refrain from reprisals against Afghans who worked with the international community. She said the onus now was on the Taliban to honor those commitments.
I urge this council to take bold and vigorous action, commensurate with the gravity of this crisis, by establishing a dedicated mechanism to closely monitor the evolving human rights situation in Afghanistan, including in particular the Taliban's implementation of its promises with a focus on prevention.
Bachelet said united action by member states will be an important signal to the Taliban that a return to past practices will not be accepted by the international community. Shahzad Akbar, chair of the Afghanistan Independent Human Rights Commission, expressed disappointment at the Council's failure to create fact-finding missions to monitor, report, and gather evidence of past Taliban violations and abuses.
The least the special session can do is to illustrate through actions to Afghans that they will not look away, that the world is committed to at least a credible, strong, and well-resourced mechanism to document the abuses.
Akbar called the draft resolution tabled at the special session a travesty, considering the well-documented violations and war crimes committed by the Taliban against women and girls, human rights defenders, and journalists, among others. She added Afghan activists on the ground who face direct threats to their lives demand and deserve better than the Council's tepid response.
To be frank with you, you are failing them. But now, today, not next month, not next March, you have the chance to redeem yourselves. Please take it.
Human Rights Watch agreed with that position. It warned failure to act now would tarnish the Council's credibility, not just in Afghanistan, but in other human rights crises. The United Nations has not recognized the Taliban as the legitimate rulers of Afghanistan. So the ambassador to the UN in Geneva of the former Afghan government took the floor. Nasir Ahmad Andisha described the critical recent developments in his country and called for international support. He said his country must not be abandoned and forgotten by the world. He said the lives, rights, and dignity of his people depended upon that.
We still hope and we urge you that the outcome of this session delivers a strong message to all parties, including the Taliban, that abuses and violation of human rights law and international humanitarian law undermines both peace and justice and will have consequences.
U.S. Department of State Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights, Usra Zeya, welcomed the Council's urgent attention to the dire human rights situation in Afghanistan. She said the protection of civilians must remain paramount. She condemned attacks on Afghans seeking to aid the U.S. and said all Afghans and foreign nationals who wish to depart must be allowed to do so safely. The U.S. joined a group of more than 60 countries that demanded the immediate cessation of targeted killings of women's rights defenders. The group also called on those in power in Afghanistan to guarantee women's and girls' rights to education, work, health, and freedom of movement. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, many Afghans in the United States are concerned about the well-being of their family and the future of their homeland. Happening now in Asia, in Singapore, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris said Tuesday, China, quote, continues to coerce, to intimidate, and to make claims to the vast majority of the South China Sea. Harris said China's actions, quote, continue to undermine the rules-based order and threaten the sovereignty of nations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. The Taliban is vowing to protect minority and women's rights, but many Afghans in the U.S. are concerned about the well-being of their family and friends back home and the future of their homeland. VOA's Oshiman Apte spoke with some Afghan community members in this report.
Muhammad Dad Sarwari and his friends are nervously watching events unfold in Afghanistan.
It's not a fall of a regime. It's a fall of a generation. An educated generation of girls and boys who are educated, who built their dream, their hope for a better future of Afghanistan at the cost of blood and treasure of the United States and other ally countries in Afghanistan.
They are worried about their families and friends under Taliban rule.
Not only my family, but the whole country is facing the same problem. We can't bring our families here, that's one problem. And we can't go there, that's another problem.
Right now it's unknown. They have like, they are saying right now it's the Taliban as the one group, but it's not true. Right now there's like one of them is making one statement, then the next day the other is making another statement, which is it's really dangerous.
Afghans whom VOA spoke with in America disagree with America's handling of the troop withdrawal. Joseph Azam co-founded Afghan Americans for Biden Harris.
I think the buck stops with President Biden because he is in charge, right? And so that is something that cannot be argued. However, this process of withdrawal started under President Trump. The back and forth continued from President Bush onto President Obama.
Azam accuses former President of Afghanistan Ashraf Ghani and his administration for incompetence and corruption and says they are also to blame for the country's current state. Others say the focus now must be on how the Taliban will rule.
What they are saying right now is we are going to add minorities and respect to human rights. I don't believe it. We can see a sign of those that they already not following it, what they are saying.
Some Afghan Americans are holding out hope.
It appears that the Taliban gave protection to former high-ranking government personnel, even those who were governors, those who were military commanders or ministers.
Members of the Afghan community are urging the U.S. and other nations to use leverage to ensure the Taliban respect human rights and honor other promises.
If the Taliban is really would like to govern on Afghanistan and they would like to rule over Afghanistan, they desperately need support, financial support, political support from the world, from other countries. And that support needs to be conditional, and that's the kind of pressure that they can utilize over Taliban right now and also their sympathizer.
We need to adhere to international human rights. This is a humanitarian crisis that's occurring in Afghanistan right now. And we also need to ensure that any government that does come out is inclusive of all of the Afghans, regardless of their creed, regardless of their ethnicity.
The Afghan American community is also calling on the White House to speed up evacuations of all special immigrant visa applicants and their families. Anshuman Apte, VOA News, New York.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has agreed to be the ruling political party's vice presidential candidate next year's election, the PDP-Laban party said on Tuesday, laying the groundwork for the leader to stay in power beyond his term. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Greece has completed the construction of a border fence along its frontier with Turkey as European fears grow of an influx of refugees from Afghanistan. As Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA, memories of the 2015 European migrant crisis are still powerful. But many analysts say that 6 years on, it is much tougher for migrants to reach Europe.
The new border fence runs the 40-kilometer length of Greece's land frontier with Turkey. Its construction was fast-tracked in anticipation of an influx of refugees from Afghanistan heading to Europe.
We support the democratic rights and freedoms of people, but we cannot allow the instrumentalization of migrant flows that could possibly occur.
Greece says it will treat refugees in accordance with European Union policy and international law. The country was the main gateway in 2015 when 1.2 million refugees and migrants entered Europe. Many were Syrians fleeing the civil war. European leaders have warned in recent days of a renewed influx of refugees fleeing Afghanistan. But those fears are misguided, says migration analyst Helena Hahn.
Deterrence measures as well as containment measures by neighboring countries and potentially also the Taliban themselves, as they continue to reveal their true agenda, will actually prevent people from leaving the country. Iran, for instance, has repeatedly closed border crossings and has suggested that refugee camps be set up within the country, but not allowing people to cross the borders. Turkey has also built a wall on its border to Iran and has also increased the capacity of its so-called repatriation centers.
Despite the measures, many Afghans have managed to reach Turkey. These migrants are being held in the eastern city of Van.
I want to say to Europe, to other countries, to help us. We are Afghan. We are not fighting. We are not Talib. Just we want to have a good life.
Those caught are detained in centers like this. Turkey says it has halted repatriation flights to Afghanistan.
We ensure that they are resettled to countries such as in the European Union, America and Canada.
But it's not clear how many refugees those countries will accept. Visiting a reception hub for Afghan refugees close to Madrid on Sunday, EU officials urged member states and allies to take in more refugees. So far, the vast majority of those being evacuated are those who worked alongside Western forces in Afghanistan. Europe can do more, says analyst Hahn.
EU member states can voluntarily increase their resettlement pledges. This would, you know, traditionally, in the past couple of years, Syrians have been a major focus, but we may see that these geographic priorities change.
Meanwhile, Poland has said it will build a fence along its border with Belarus, which has seen an influx of refugees, including Afghans, in recent weeks. Poland claims they are economic migrants and accuses Belarus of directing them toward the border. But human rights groups have accused Poland of violating the Geneva Convention by ignoring the migrants' claims for asylum. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Making headlines in Asia, the U.S. supports humanitarian aid for North Korea regardless of progress on the country's denuclearization. The U.S. envoy to Pyongyang said Tuesday at the end of a four-day visit to Seoul. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the 2020 Paralympic Games began in Tokyo with an opening ceremony on Tuesday. As Japan continues to raise awareness of needs for the disabled amid the struggle with coronavirus outbreaks, Steve Ross has more from Tokyo for VOA.
The excitement of the 32nd Olympiad continues in Tokyo with the Summer Paralympic Games. Following a one-year delay due to the COVID-19 pandemic, tensions grew even higher as Japan experienced its most intense viral wave during the Olympic Games that concluded just days ago. But frequent testing and virus prevention measures managed to keep most all of the athletes, trainers, delegations, and Olympic staff and volunteers safe, and the games were conducted without any serious disruptions. The Tokyo 2020 Paralympics officially opened Tuesday night with a ceremony of their own at Japan's National Stadium ahead of the first competitive events Wednesday at a number of venues. Continuing through September 5th, about 4,400 athletes will compete in over 500 events in 22 different sports. Entrants from roughly 160 countries and a refugee athlete team will compete over 13 days. Emperor Naruhito was on hand to declare the Paralympics officially open. IPC International Paralympic Committee President Andrew Parson has called these games the most important Paralympics in history because the pandemic has disproportionately affected persons with disabilities. For the health of all participating, just as with the preceding Olympic Games, most spectators will be barred, but competition will be followed closely via television and online. The IPC estimates that worldwide there are about 1.2 billion people with disabilities, making up some 15% of the global population. Tokyo is the first city to host the Paralympic Games twice, the first time around in concert with the 1964 Tokyo Olympics. The Paralympic Games were launched at the 1960 Olympics in Rome. At this week's events, the first official Paralympics refugee team will present a contrast to participants in prior games competing for nation states. The six athletes, one woman and five men, will represent the estimated 82 million people forced to flee their homes and cross into another country. A refugee Olympic team was first introduced at the 2016 Olympics. The Tokyo Paralympics will, by example, focus on disability rights, accessibility, and inclusion, not just through the events, but also in the structure of the venues. The Tokyo 2020 Organizing Committee laid out guidelines for the Olympic and Paralympic Games, guaranteeing accessible ramps, stairs, desks, doors, elevators, and escalators. The guidelines are likely to have an impact on Japan, which is still working to provide accessibility in complex facilities like train stations. And from the start, the first of the Paralympic events Wednesday may surprise some sports fans. They include equestrian events, wheelchair fencing, wheelchair rugby, and more. Join us next time for highlights. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
In other news, Beeple, NFT, words familiar mostly in the worlds of cryptocurrency and digital art, but they have revolutionized the art world and are now worth millions of dollars. Maxima Vlashenka looked into what exactly they are and why they are worth so much in this story narrated by VOA's Anna Rice.
Mike Winkelmann is Beeple, an American digital artist who made headlines in March when he sold an NFT of his work for $69.3 million at an online auction. NFT stands for non-fungible token. But what does that mean? Non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, are basically unique pieces of software that can't be duplicated, kind of like a digital Mona Lisa that can't ever be copied. They're the newest form of digital art. Unlike cryptocurrencies, they cannot be traded or exchanged. They're made using blockchain technology, which is one way that the investing world ensures that cryptocurrencies can never be hacked. Because once a blockchain is created, it can never be replicated. That's what also makes every NFT unique and great for selling or collecting.
So a painting is one of a kind, a sculpture is one of a kind, but a digital artwork can be reproduced millions of times, infinitely. Blockchain is a game changer in that through code, that file then becomes, you know, non-fungible. It cannot be altered, changed. It's one of a kind.
Beeple's success was met with enthusiasm in the art circles, both digital and traditional. Soon after the historical auction, the company called Injective Protocol bought artwork by Banksy called Morons, White, for $95,000. After the purchase, the art piece was digitalized, an NFT token was made, and the art was burnt on air. Recently, New York City saw the world's first physical NFT gallery space open in the spring of 2021. Since the start of 2021, the NFT market has grown dramatically, and experts believe NFT tokens will continue to gain popularity and momentum among both collectors and investors. For Maxima Vloshenko in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.